It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stenz, in for Kate Archer-Kent. There's no agreed-upon definition of what makes a COVID long hauler. What we know is that some people who catch COVID end up with symptoms that linger for months, long after the virus is traceable in their body. Are you a COVID long hauler? What's your experience been so far? What are you most worried about? We're at 1-800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org. Paul Mathis lives in Rib Mountain, Wisconsin, and has been dealing with COVID symptoms for nearly 6 months. Good morning, Paul. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Molly. Thank you for having me.
Sure. So you got COVID, as I understand, back in October. How severe was your case?
My case was really mild. It started with just a couple cold and flu symptoms for a day or so, body aches, a little feverish. Got better for a day, and then suddenly my smell and taste went away within an hour. And then it was a good week to 10 days of just really heavy fatigue, a lot of sleep, little congestion, but honestly, really mild compared to what it could have been and what others I've known have suffered.
Did you go to the doctor?
I did not. I mean, at the time, it seemed like more severe cases that were going in, and I just rested a lot, took a lot of fluids, other than being just really tired. It didn't seem worthy of going to the doctor.
Right. Like with flu, what are they going to, what options do they have for you at that point?
Exactly.
So at what point did you start to wonder, why do I still have symptoms?
It probably would have been, maybe about 3 weeks out from when I was diagnosed, when the positive test came back, which I knew it was going to be positive as soon as my taste and smell went away. It seemed like that was a pretty big indicator. Probably about 3 weeks or so, I still could not taste or smell anything. I was a little bit tired. I would have, fatigue here and there at that point. But that's really when I started, noticing that I was still, I became out of breath very easily, and I would get just like rapid heartbeat, just randomly. I could be sitting and doing nothing, and my heart would just start pounding like I was, drank way too much coffee.
Yeah. How does that make you feel when you're experiencing things like this?
Oh, the anxiety ramps up quite a bit. The taste and smell was more psychological. It started to get depressing at some point because, anybody who knows me knows I'm a foodie. I like to cook. I definitely like to eat. And nothing tasted good. I mean, I could taste salty, sweet, savory, sour, but I couldn't taste the flavor around it. It was so weird.
Yeah.
And the smell, I mean, honestly, you couldn't tell if milk was bad. You couldn't tell if, anything like that. We had our daughter was, after she came back, she kind of went into exile for about 3 weeks when we were diagnosed. My wife and I both were diagnosed at the same time. We would have her smell stuff for us all the time, because my wife's smell was off just a little bit where it wasn't as strong for her. She could still smell some base smells, but it wasn't as strong.
Interesting.
But the heartbeat and the loss of breath, that provides a lot of anxiety. I mean, that really was those were the two that worried me. And to date, the out of breath is still, it hasn't improved at all.
To this day, you still feel that way?
Yeah. Rapid heartbeat seems to have slowed, not as often that happens, but I can walk, 50 feet and have to take like an extra breath.
Wow.
And then if it's like stairs, any kind of incline, then I'll start, where I have to take multiple breaths. Or if I go for a short walk and it's, got an incline, I'll be breathing out of my mouth.
Wow. Have you been to see anyone since then, since your initial diagnosis?
I have gone to the doctor. I mean, we had like a long talk about, you know, like, you know, where things are at and everything. We kind of just established like a baseline of where we're at, some of the possible things that we could do, but there's a lot that's really unknown at that time. So it was kind of a meeting to establish a baseline of where I was at. I have a follow-up that'll be coming up that we'll talk about, you know, some possible other options that we can do, but you know, there's not a lot that really can be done at this point. So,
yeah. Well, Paul, we have callers waiting to join and talk about their experiences too. So I want to go to the phones and take Nikki next from Whitewater. Good morning, Nikki. What's your experience been?
Good morning. I just wanted to share. I am unfortunate enough to have had COVID twice. The first time I just passed my 1 year anniversary was last March. And again in September, and have had some long haul symptoms. So I definitely lost my taste and smell the first time, which was how I realized that I had COVID the first time. It was very newly emerging evidence of COVID being linked to loss of taste and smell last March. And that has yet to completely come back a year later, unfortunately, for those of you who have that. I still have a very distinct what I call the COVID smell, so I'll say something smells like COVID. And
what does it smell like? What does that smell like?
So I've heard a lot of people say it smells like something burning. And as disgusting as it is, I think it smells almost like, to me, it doesn't. It's almost more like a nasty phlegm smell. It's not a pleasant smell.
Okay.
I know, it's terrible. Yeah. That's the best way I have to describe it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's real life. That is real life.
And I also have had heart palpitations, like just the racing heart, even lying in bed, the shortness of breath. And for me, perhaps the worst has been brain fog that thankfully has diminished quite a bit recently, but that got so bad after my case in September the second time. That was real terrible.
What worries you most going ahead, looking ahead?
I'm much more optimistic now. The shortness of breath is still concerning to me. I'm 34 and I can't run much at all, which is strange. I worry about the long-term impacts. I had some cardiac involvement this last time. I had to have a cardiac stress test after abnormal EKGs, multiple abnormal EKGs, which was obviously concerning. The first one, a cardiologist looked at it and said, "Oh yeah, that's just a COVID EKG."
Wow.
As if, and I, well, yes.
Okay. Yeah. Does that help? Yeah. Oh, Nikki, I'm so sorry. Thank you for calling and sharing your experience.
Can I share one thing? The reason I called in was because I wanted to share that I was apprehensive at first to be vaccinated because I was concerned that my side effects and my long-term symptoms may be made worse. And I received my first vaccine in December and my second in January, and none of my symptoms were made worse at all. And I'm feeling quite a bit better now in March. And so I was worried about like the brain fog or the cardiac symptoms being made worse, perhaps by side effects of the vaccine, and they were not at all.
They've helped you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Nikki, for sharing. Paul, that sounds similar to the experience that you've had.
Yeah. And when she mentioned her COVID scent, that's exactly what I call. I've got a COVID scent as well. Mine's not an unpleasant smell. It started out as kind of like a clean antiseptic kind of smell to it, very sterile. It's morphed a little bit. There's a kind of a sweetness to it, but I've come to resent it just because it kind of replaces certain scents.
Yeah, I gotta admit, I smell soap in my bathroom every morning. That's just one thing that I do. Just to like, do I still have it? I can still smell. Hallelujah. It's something that we've had to do this year. I wonder, have you been able to be vaccinated?
Yes, actually, I had my first shot last Friday. I'm pretty excited. There's been, multiple reports of people that have been long haulers that have seen their symptoms get better after being vaccinated. So I was kind of hoping that will eventually happen.
We heard actually from a caller, Dick from La Crosse called in earlier, and he said that he heard that a long hauler who didn't have a sense of smell got the vaccine and their sense of smell returned within a day. So,
wow.
That's just one of the hallmarks of this disease. I feel that it's so variable and people are having such disparate experiences. Well, we're learning all about coronavirus long haulers this hour. You're listening to The Morning Show, and I'm Molly Stentz. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz. We're speaking with Paul Mathis of Rib Mountain, Wisconsin. He first contracted COVID back in October and has been dealing with COVID symptoms for nearly 6 months. Are you a long hauler too? What's your experience been? Join in 1-800-642-1234. We're at ideas@wpr.org. Well, we have another caller joining us from Stevens Point this morning. Lena, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Sure. What was your experience?
Yeah. So I just wanted to speak to you. I actually thankfully did not contract COVID myself, but my mother did. And I was living with her at the time. So I kind of had firsthand witness to her experience. And gratefully, she had a very mild case with it. She had she was lethargic. She did lose her taste and smell. She had the cough. But, she told us that once it was over, she actually has had, she came down with colds that were a little bit worse than her experience with COVID. So we're grateful for that. But she came down with it in September of last year, and she lost her taste and smell as well. And she also, like what Paul kind of experienced with the metallic taste and things like that. And also, we're a big Italian family, so her losing her taste has been especially disappointing. But one thing that we've talked about, the reason that the taste and smell might be lingering so long in her particular case, and this is something that her doctor has explained also and theorized, I should say, is she's a smoker. And after she got COVID, she did greatly reduce the quantity that she would smoke, but the habit was unfortunately still there. And yeah, that's something that's been theorized, that's been kind of, again, in her case, exacerbating her longevity of the taste and smell losses is smoking.
Interesting. And is that still true today for her?
Yeah, she got her first round of the vaccination, and she just got it last week, so I haven't been able to kind of get an update on how she's been feeling after her first dose. But yeah, it still persists, that loss of taste and smell. And like I said, unfortunately, the habit of her smoking is still stuck. And yeah, like I said, it's something that her doctor, of course, has always wanted her to stop doing, as we all do. But she's kind of said that it might be particularly contributing to it.
Yeah. Well, best of luck to you and your mom, and I hope she recovers. Thank you for calling this morning. Paul, we're hearing from so many listeners this morning that are sharing their experiences, their friends, their family. I wonder, do you have a support network? Have you reached out to others who also have had these long COVID symptoms?
For myself, I actually have learned quite a bit from, there's a group started by a woman whose family had COVID very early on last year when it was first coming out. She started a group called Survivor Corps. It's a COVID long hauler support network, bringing awareness and knowledge. And she's been basically crowdsourcing information from people that have joined this group on Facebook and social media and have been sharing their experiences. And it was really helpful to kind of see, you know, some of the longevity of certain symptoms that people have had, but more than that, just the variety of symptoms has been just crazy. But just kind of knowing that there are people out there and groups kind of advocating for it has been really important to me. Unfortunately, I've known a lot of, friends, family, colleagues that have gotten COVID, and some that have had some experiences linger longer. And, it's definitely a reason why I just make a small post basically once a week. It started as a way for me to kind of track my own progress and symptoms and anything like that. But I had people reach out and actually ask if I would continue to update them because they experienced, symptoms and stuff. And it was helping, them kind of realize, when certain things might get better or what to expect or anything like that.
Yeah, I know folks in my family that have dealt with cancer did the same exact thing, learning from the direct experiences of people that are going through what you're going through has been so helpful. And I imagine, given that this is so novel and there's so much we don't know and so much, as you mentioned, anxiety just about the unknown, right? That seems key.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it seems like, the mental health side of it is often as bad as the physical side. I mean, there's a certain level of anxiety for people, even the people that have not gotten it. I mean, that are worried that they might get it or a loved one might get it. I've always said it wasn't about me. I didn't care if, I got it as much as, I would feel devastated if I had passed it along to somebody else. And that's the reason why my particular fear, if you will, of the coronavirus wasn't in contracting it. It was in passing it. So, right. Yeah, it definitely helps to have a support group.
Yeah. We heard from Courtney from Menasha, who called but couldn't stay with us. Courtney has a coworker who's a long hauler, and her coworker suffers from depression. And she thinks it's been made worse because of the long hauler symptoms. And so she was talking to that point about mental health and depression and how this can be caught up with COVID. We're at 1-800-642-1234, and we are talking about COVID long haulers all hour. Well, Paul, we're about out of time with you. But I wonder what gives you hope? What do you look forward to as you manage this and deal with it?
Well, like I've always said, I by no means have the worst case that I've heard. I've known people that have had it much worse. Initially, I've known people that have had long haul symptoms that are absolutely devastating. I'm still upright. I'm still functioning. I might be, diminished a bit, but, that gives me hope. I think the vaccine is, it's phenomenal that we've been able to have vaccine research get us to this point so early on in the process where we can actually already be vaccinating this much of the country this rapidly. So that does give me some hope. I just hope that as a country, we would come together a little more and not politicize our healthcare. I mean, it's our health, and I believe a heavy dose of empathy and just general common sense would go a long way.
Well, Paul, best of luck to you, and I wish you all the health and recovery possible. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
We've been talking to Paul Mathis from Rib Mountain, Wisconsin. Up next is news. Then we'll catch up with an infectious disease doctor who's trying to unlock the mysteries of those who've had COVID for the long haul. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Molly Stentz. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz in for Kate Archer-Kent. COVID vaccination rates are climbing, but so too are deadlier variants of the virus. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky said on Tuesday, the U.S. is now seeing an uptick in cases again, and she was afraid of the next surge.
I so badly want to be done. I know you all so badly want to be done. We are just almost there, but not quite yet.
As the U.S. heads to a likely fourth surge a year after the first, what do we know about the thousands of Americans who are still dealing with COVID months after their original diagnosis? Have you had COVID symptoms for months? What do you wish we knew? We're at 1-800-642-1234, ideas@wpr.org. Here to help us understand more is Dr. Aurora Popvikas. She's an infectious disease specialist at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. We've heard from multiple callers so far this morning who've wondered if vaccines are helping reduce symptoms associated with long COVID. Have researchers examined this question?
That's a really good question, and certainly very intriguing. We have seen reports in the media and the news from patients who have had COVID infections and reported suffering from persistent symptoms and have been described as long haulers. They have reported that in some cases, getting the vaccine helped their symptoms improve significantly. So far, I have not seen any standardized research looking at this issue and studying whether this is validated in a clinical trial. Certainly, studies could be underway. Right now, we just have mostly self-reports from patients who are on social media platforms. Some of them, a significant number, report that their symptoms have improved. On the other hand, other patients have also reported on these platforms that their symptoms have not improved, and some fewer have also maybe thought their symptoms were worsened, especially after the first dose. So while this particular issue has not been rigorously studied in trials, we do know that the vaccines are quite effective at preventing disease. So probably the best way of trying to reduce the impact of long COVID complications is to prevent having COVID infections in the first place.
Sure. I wonder what's going on with this different sense of smell. So many people have reported this, losing their sense of smell and even beginning to smell differently. What is this phenomenon?
Yeah, so that's part of the way the virus affects our body during the acute infection period. The virus can actually affect any organ. It certainly also can affect the nervous system and the olfactory nerves that are associated with the sense of smell. The symptom, though, is delayed, not quite immediately as the initial infection appears, but most patients have reported this probably days to weeks after the initial infection, and it is considered one of the delayed symptoms associated with COVID-19 infection. For the majority of patients, though, although this altered sense of smell or loss of smell persists, and for some have lasted weeks to maybe months, the majority, though, have improved, and for many patients, their sense of smell has returned to normal.
Hmm. Well, I want to go to the phones because we do have a caller, Becky, joining us this morning with a question about COVID. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's your experience been? Yeah.
I had COVID in November, and my smell is not quite the same, but that isn't the big thing. The major thing to me is the insomnia, and I've talked to other people who've had it, and they said that they've experienced the same thing, even with taking sleeping medications and anything, Theraflu, NyQuil. I've been up since 2 o'clock this morning, and I don't know what do you think it's COVID related? I'm not sure how long will this last. I've never had problems sleeping before.
Good question. Dr. Pavvikas, have you heard that from others? How common is
this? Yes, certainly. So sleeping difficulties are some of the most commonly reported symptoms in patients with persistent symptoms or new symptoms after COVID-19 infection. Insomnia also happens to be one of the most commonly or frequent symptom in general during terms of stress, and may affect other patients who didn't have COVID infection. It's hard to know really how the two groups compare, because so far we haven't really seen standardized studies that look at patients after COVID infection versus patients who didn't have any infection and how they fared during the pandemic, as many are under stress. But certainly difficulty sleeping, insomnia has been described commonly in about maybe 20% of the patients who do have long COVID type symptoms. So it's not unusual. We would recommend the usual algorithm to try to manage this, of course, starting with making sure that there is no underlying abnormality, like a sleep disturbance that sometimes can be associated with insomnia. Some patients who have had, say, really severe COVID-19 and have been hospitalized or had pulmonary disease, they might still have sequelae longer after hospitalization and might have difficulty with oxygenation, or they might have obstructive sleep apneas, which can impair sleep. But if the case is that of a previous mild infection that was not severe, didn't require hospitalization, and there is insomnia that's new, we would typically recommend the usual sleep hygiene that's actually, you know, requires things like try to minimize screens before bedtime, try to minimize stimulants such as caffeine closer to bedtime, or maybe decrease caffeine intake during the day. Try not to lay in bed if you're not able to sleep. And it's recommended that patients might do better if they actually get up and go to another room that's not the bedroom and maybe do something calming that makes them feel relaxed, maybe read a book, not a screen, something in print, or maybe practice some mindfulness or think relaxing thoughts if possible. The other thing that's very difficult, of course, is not to be stressed about not sleeping, watching the clock, and that it just induces further anxiety. So, yeah.
Doctor, I wonder, though, how do you know when it's time to see a doctor?
Yeah, so I think that insomnia is not something that people can really sustain long term, and it certainly impairs quality of life and function. So I think that if patients or if people feel like they don't get adequate sleep and they're unable to function as they normally would during the day, that's the time to see a doctor and see what's going on.
And for those that have COVID symptoms, from what I understand, it's no longer will show up on a test anymore, months out. So is it important for them to, if they suspect that they're still experiencing symptoms and they believe it to be related from their initial diagnosis, do you recommend people seek medical attention, see a doctor, or not?
Well, I think that we would not recommend anyone staying at home and worrying whether their symptoms are really severe and what's going to happen and will this progress and get worse and what's going on. That is not necessarily a good state of mind. And it's also really difficult to tell over the phone what's going on.
Sure.
Yes, the test that looks at acute infection will no longer be positive. But the treatment of symptoms starts with an evaluation to figure out where they come from and how severe they are, whether there's an underlying organ dysfunction that puts them at risk for untoward outcome. So I think for all these reasons, an initial evaluation is recommended for patients who have prolonged symptoms that alter their quality of life.
Sure. So there is still, there's still value there in seeking professional medical attention.
Absolutely. And I think that the medical community is becoming increasingly aware of the impact of COVID-19 with persistent sequelae and the longer type, more chronic manifestations. So most hospitals and clinics are preparing for taking care of patients with post-acute COVID syndrome. So I think that certainly medical evaluation and treatment as needed are recommended.
We're discussing long haulers this hour, people who feel sick from the coronavirus long after being infected. We're speaking with Dr. Aurora Pop-Vikas from UW Health. You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Molly Stentz. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz. We're talking about COVID long haulers, those who've had lingering or reoccurring COVID symptoms for months after their original diagnosis. Have you had this experience? How's your sense of smell? You can find us at 1-800-642-1234 or ideas@wpr.org. We're talking to Dr. Aurora Pop-Vikas. She's an infectious disease specialist at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. I wonder, Doctor, about the role and interconnection between COVID and mental health. We've heard from callers this hour wondering if depression could be worsened because of COVID long haul symptoms. Have you seen this?
Yes, certainly. Several studies have reported worsening anxiety or depression among patients with persistent COVID symptoms weeks or months after their initial infection. And whereas the biological mechanisms of these symptoms are yet to be fully elucidated, it's not so unexpected to see these symptoms, considering the stress that everyone is under, certainly after an acute illness that may have been severe, or even after mild initial illness, but with persistent symptoms that impair function, for example, or for people who have been used to have very high functioning lifestyles and were maybe extremely athletic or energetic, and to now have the need to modify their daily activities because of maybe waxing and waning symptoms or persistent symptoms, this can be disheartening. So we certainly have seen reports of worsening depression and anxiety, and this underscores the importance of adequate mental health resources that need to be available and accessed for all affected patients.
And Doctor, we have another caller joining us. We have Mike in Madison next. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. In February of last year, I had a bout of dizziness that left me bedridden for over a month and virtually stumbling around for another several weeks after that. This was all pre-COVID, so I wasn't diagnosed with COVID itself. But now various studies have come out to say that this is all pretty close to that. It's labyrinthitis, and there's two other things, inner ear and a brain virus that they diagnosed me with. But it was all very confusing. They couldn't figure out what it was. Long story short is this, a year later now, I still have dizzy bouts, and I'm out of breath and tired all the time. And the UK just came out with a new study saying that 30% of long haulers have tinnitus and some other dizziness spells. And I was wondering if your guest could delve into that just a little bit.
Sure, Mike, let's ask her. Doctor, are these symptoms of dizziness, is that something you've seen as prevalent among COVID survivors?
So it's not necessarily the most commonly reported symptoms, but we have seen a variety of symptoms reported, and every experience is unique. We, in this case, are not 100% sure maybe that this is post-COVID related, but certainly it sounds like it's related to an infection that may have been viral in origin, could have been COVID in February. The long-term persistence, I think, suggests need for ongoing evaluation and treatment. So I would recommend, access to specialists that can help evaluate and relieve symptoms of tinnitus and dizziness, such as neurologists and ENT physicians, for example, in addition to the ongoing evaluation with primary care physicians.
And what treatments are currently available or being tried?
So the treatment currently, until we understand the biological mechanisms better, the treatments are aimed at relieving symptoms. So depending on the clinical manifestations that each person presents with, they are prescribed symptomatic relief after an evaluation that's comprehensive enough to rule out severe underlying illnesses. And this usually is done in conjunction with the primary care physician and the referral to subspecialists as needed.
And what do you wish that we knew at this point about COVID symptoms and long COVID?
So, I think that the most pressing question in my mind and in probably everyone's mind is, what really causes this? What is the biological mechanism that's responsible. It's probably more than one, because I suspect that this is a multifactorial disease that has a heterogeneous presentation and is caused by probably several possible mechanisms depending on how the initial infection went. But once that is understood, then we can begin to think about specific therapies that I hope will be more effective at providing perhaps more prompt relief.
What's the state of clinical research into this right now?
So I think that long COVID is a focus of intense research, both in the basic science arena as well as in the clinical healthcare arena and public health as well, trying to delineate the biological pathophysiology of disease, the epidemiology at a population-based level, and the clinical manifestations and best treatments that could be tried. So there are lots of studies in progress. It's very good, and I'm optimistic that we will have answers soon, especially since a lot of funding has been committed. For example, the NIH committed more than $1 billion in February, March towards the study of this syndrome. So I think that in the upcoming months, we will have more answers and we will be in a better state in terms of our ability to manage this syndrome.
How long do you see that taking? When you say soon, what's the horizon?
You know, I will say that we have seen scientific discovery progress at an unprecedented, extraordinary pace during this pandemic. We have seen that the collaboration between various communities, the scientific community, the healthcare, public health, governmental agencies, national and international collaborations have all responded in an amazing way and have facilitated, and not to forget the pharmaceutical industry, have facilitated discovery in an extraordinary, unprecedented pace and very effective, case in point being the vaccines. So I think this is how we do science now during this pandemic. I hope that is how we will do science in the future as well. So when I say soon, I mean not how it used to be, years before we get to a therapy, but months to maybe an year.
Months to a year. Well, thank
that's,
you.
That's my optimistic side speaking.
I hope you're right. Thank you, Doctor, for joining us this morning.
Sure. Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. Aurora Popvikas is an infectious disease specialist at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. I'm Molly Stenz, and this is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.